Welcome to episode 43 of Booty and Bossy Eat, Drink, Knit. I think we forgot to do that last time, so better do it again. Our listeners, hi mom, might remember that for episode 42, we interviewed Debbie Frabel, owner of Serial Knitters Dye House, and she shared with us her killer sangria recipe. So Booty and I have tried that, and Booty, you want to take us through?
First off, it was really, really good. Killer is the right word.
Killer is the right word, yep.
So it's one bottle of Cabernet, and she recommends Freak Show Cabernet, but whatever you like for the Cabernet. 1.5 cups of brandy, right? That's, I think, a large part of the killer. She says whatever brandy you have. E&J. I found one that was on sale. A cup of orange juice, and then one of those canisters of frozen juice. She uses the Dole orange peach mango. That can be kind of hard to find.
Yeah.
So if you find that, then you add the frozen concentrate, and then you add water, whatever it says on the can. If you can't find that, then you can add about 4 cups of orange juice, or they sell the orange peach mango in a carton. So you could add that, or whatever juice you like. Cherry juice, if you like. I think I added about 1 cup of that. Brown sugar, white sugar to taste. She says 1/2 cup, give or take. And there again, you know, depending on how sweet you want it. And then cut up fruit. Orange, apple, lemon, lime. I just stuck with the citrus. I did orange and lemon and lime. And mix it all up and let it marinate for 2 hours. If you let it marinate for longer than that, your fruit is going to get pretty boozy.
Yeah.
One thing I think you could do is you could mix everything except the fruit ahead of time.
And yeah.
Then fruit 2 hours before serving. I served it for my book club, and it was a big hit.
Mm.
Normally, we have about 6 people in our book club. So 1 bottle of wine is not quite enough, but 2 is too much. So this was nice because it just extended that.
It does make a lot. I decided that I was going to try and follow Debbie's recipe to the letter. So I got the Freak Show Cabernet Sauvignon, which is very good. I got the E&J brandy, and I did do 1.5 cups, even though you told me that seems like a lot. But then my friend Mary Ellen and I, hi Mary Ellen, tried it, and we thought it was really good. I didn't add any sugar. I think it was fine without additional sugar. And I did get a carton of the Dole Orange Peach Mango. Couldn't find it frozen. And do you know what those bastards at Dole have done, Booty? They have taken a book out of the Frito-Lay people's marketing and the cereal people. So a carton, do you remember how much a carton of juice? I don't buy juice that often, but do you know how much is usually in that?
I would have said it's 1/2 gallon, so 8 cups.
64 ounces. Guess how much is in there now? 59 ounces.
Oh, no.
Those cheeky bastards. Those dirty little toe rags.
Did not know that.
Line-thieving dirty little toe rags at the old Dole company. Cheating us out of 5 ounces of orange peach mango juice.
Well, luckily, you still have plenty for the sink.
Yeah, so I used 4 cups of that, and then I used 1 cup of orange juice. I didn't think it needed any sugar, but that's the nice thing is you can taste it. And I did what you said. I left the fruit out, so I've still got, if anybody wants to come over. But I thought it was really yummy, and I didn't think it had too much brandy.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Oh. That is a nice thing. You can always add more or less, whatever.
Yeah.
Both.
And I did add the cherry juice. I'd forgotten that I was supposed to get tart cherry juice, but do you want to tell about the tart cherry juice tip?
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. So, if any of you out there are like me, women of a certain age, menopause issues, one of the lovely things that you find out is that sleeping is hard. And, we all need our sleep. So, my mom, hi, mom,
Hi, Mom.
she saw this program on PBS about foods that help you sleep. And one of them was tart cherry juice. And this has been a total game changer. So I have about half a cup of cherry juice before bed, and it helps so much. There's melatonin in it, but at least for me, just having melatonin, a pill, it doesn't help. Whereas this, I think there's something about the melatonin in the cherry juice that's it in as longer lasting, or it helps you stay asleep.
Or maybe the body just processes it more slowly. Does it have to be tart cherry juice?
I'm not sure. I think it's
Okay.
supposed to be tart cherry juice.
Because we got a big container of cherry juice.
Well, try it and see. You can also get pills that have cherry juice. I tried that and I didn't find it worked as well as the straight cherry juice.
But I like cherry juice, so that's kind of a nice thing.
Yeah, it is. It's a nice little treat before bed.
Yeah, so highly recommend. Thank you, Debbie, for the killer sangria recipe. Definitely gonna keep this around. And like I said, you can just add the fruit. I made it last week and I tried some last night and it was still good. So yeah. Okay, so Booty, for our knitting and pop culture moment. This was a book that we picked up. Actually, I got it as a Christmas present from the ever supportive husband. It's Anne McDonald's No Idle Hands: The Social History of American Knitting. She is also the author of Feminine Ingenuity: How Women Inventors Changed America. So that's another book. This was a book that I'd been wanting to pick up and read and talk with you about. Was I a sort of a book bully? Did I send it to you or did I make you buy
Yes.
it?
No, you sent it to me.
Yeah.
I think for Valentine's Day, maybe. It's really interesting. She says at the very beginning that
Yes.
she learned at in college, I think she went to Wellesley, that you should always have your original sources. So she uses a lot of primary sources, and that's great. I could see as a historian that's an important thing to do. But when you're talking about colonial writing, it can be kind of hard to.
Yeah, sometimes the language is a little difficult. Well, and I thought it was interesting too that she made the point at the beginning. Her brother went to Yale and was a history major in the 1930s, and her father was very disgusted with him that he took a social history course with an esteemed professor that the students called pots and pans.
Right.
By the prankish students. And so the little sister, she's the little sister heading off to Wellesley, immediately declares her major in political science and history. And she says, quote, "So I consorted with kings, presidents, prime ministers, and emperors with a dash of wars and treaties on the side." But what I think that brings up from the very beginning is the kind of challenge of social history that it is often dismissed as not the stuff of important human events, that it's the stuff of the everyday, which often means that it's not the stuff that's as well documented as the things that kings and emperors and presidents are doing.
That frankly is way more interesting.
And that probably had more meaning to everyday people. She brings this up from the very beginning that because it is the domain of women, it's immediately dismissed. She's at a women's college and being directed to the real history is his story, the men's history of important men making war. That's what's really important. Ruining our economy and making war and taking over other countries.
And what I loved is she put out a call to get information from people.
Yeah, she put out a questionnaire in the column called Pat's Pointers, a weekly column that was nationally syndicated in over 80 newspapers. I'm guessing it was kind of like Ask Abby or.
And then all of these women responded with these great quotes. Like one of the questions was, why do you think more women than men knit? And they had a lot of people that said, girls are less fidgety, sit quietly longer, and perform small motor tasks like knitting earlier than boys, whose inner energy drives them to gross motor skill activity, which I don't think is true, but or at least not universal. And this other one who says, maybe we women knit more because we're involved in more intimate social interacting and the tradition of keeping hands busy while talking stuff with us. I find those fascinating, some of which I agreed with and some of which I didn't. But in general, it sparked a lot of interest.
Yeah, and I agree. I liked how she's not only diving into, women's diaries and periodicals and things and newspapers that talk about this from the Times, but she also solicited all of that and got a huge response to the point where the mailman was like, "Okay, I'm tired of trying to stuff these packages of letters into your mail slot. What are you doing?"
Right.
So, but it starts kind of with that question she kept returning to, which, why don't men knit? She found an 1888 American needlework writer who traced the sex differentiation to a competition in the Garden of Eden. Quote, whether he was slower in the work or made a bad job of it, we are not told. But for some reason, he, meaning Adam, dropped out. And the woman is now the admitted queen of needlework. MacDonald goes on to say, many queens, secure in their domestic thrones, jealously guarded the gates to their needlework sanctuary. One knitting manual editor wrote haughtily, while it is true that there are men, notably in England, who knit, it is really a woman's job. But I love that idea that Adam kind of sucked at it. What other quotes did you like? Because there were some just great quotes from people that she solicited.
I thought this one was really funny. And if you're a knitter, you'll totally appreciate this because it's a big fat lie. Under the reasons why women knit or people knit, and one was to save money. I wasn't about to pay $350 for a sweater I could make for 30. Like,
What was that yarn going to be like?
yeah, strike that, reverse it. And I also like this one that to make gifts was another
Yes.
reason. And the woman said, I'm just an ordinary grandmother knitting ordinary things for extraordinary grandchildren.
Yes. I love that. And one woman said, knitting has kept me off the shrink's couch. I like that. And my grandmother always said, God will never take you as long as you have work to finish.
We are never going to die.
Well, and somebody said that she was so devoted to knitting that if there is no needlework in heaven, I may not want to go.
Yeah. But then we also had on page 19 this poet who just is not a knitter. And she says, I am obnoxious to each carping tongue who says my hand a needle better fits.
Yes.
I thought that was great.
Well, and I think that kind of gets at a lot of the crux of the book that, on the one hand, knitting clearly becomes the domain of women, but it also becomes dismissed as woman's work. And a lot of in the first chapter, she talks a lot. That's the colonial knitters chapter. She talks a lot about women's education and how basically women, they were taught to read, maybe to write. Writing wasn't seen as quite so important, but mainly they were taught needlework, knitting and spinning. And I was surprised to learn that in colonial times, there were some laws that were passed that actually required families to produce a certain amount of yarn. And if they didn't produce that amount, then they were fined because basically they had to start clothing people. They didn't have all of the imported goods. And then later in revolutionary America, and that was very interesting to read that right now of how the burden of creating an economic boycott of British goods, which was going to be the thing that was going to hurt the British Empire the most. The reason that you have the colonies is to provide a source of wealth. And the minute that those colonies are not buying British goods, but then the women become the centerpiece for that endeavor because they're the ones that are running that household economy. And so then there start to be all of this great emphasis on make your own, and they have spinning get-togethers where a bunch of women will go and spend all day spinning and making their own yarn. And you have these organized on the Boston Commons, knitting and spinning and the creation of those raw materials becomes a political act of resistance against British imperial economic dominance.
Well, and I loved the one woman who would have messages in her ball of yarn. And so she would sit on this cliff, that edge of this cliff. She owned a tavern. She would get information about the British Army, and then she would put that inside the ball of yarn. And then when the troops were passing by, she would sort of nonchalantly throw the ball of yarn over the edge of the cliff without missing a stitch. They would get the information. And I love that they said citizens who hoarded blankets and clothing in excess of necessary home use incurred penalties and risked confiscation of the surplus clothing by local commissioners. I thought, wow, if we all had to do that now, can you
Can you
imagine?
imagine?
The excess clothing, not to mention the excess yarn.
It was really interesting to read about the Revolutionary War and particularly Martha Washington. I had kind of forgotten that first winter in Valley Forge when Washington had his troop stationed there, and they were basically naked and starving. There were local women that gathered up and mended and got together as many articles of clothing for the troops as they could. And they also brought as much food as they could for the relief of the troops. The woman recounted how she could tell that the soldiers were out foraging on the path because of the blood-soaked footprints that they left in the snow, because they didn't have adequate shoes and clothing and things like that. The clothing of the soldiers was a major endeavor. They actually appointed a clothier general who was basically in charge of getting clothes for the troops and then out the call to the states, who then pushed it down to the township, so that basically you had to either pay taxes, a tax for this, or you had to supply a certain amount of clothing to keep the men coming from your town or your area properly equipped, or you would be fined.
Yeah, that was really interesting that you could give clothing instead of pay money for your taxes.
So my heart swelled with pride reading about the women of Philadelphia and how they went around and basically raised money. They literally went door to door and raise money. And it says, the ladies going about for money exceeded everything. They were so extremely importunate with people that people were obliged to give them something just to get rid of them. But, and then they went around and raised money and then presented these funds to Martha Washington, who gave them to George Washington, who said, well, what you should really be doing is making clothes.
Right.
So then they went and bought the materials and they made 2,200 shirts. But what was so wonderful is that, and they didn't really want to do that, but they felt like, all right, well, this is what they said we should do. But each of them was inside each of these shirts, they attach the sewer's name to cement some personal bond with the wearer.
Isn't that awesome?
And I loved this idea that they were going around and raising money, something that women had never done. But then they would basically be told, okay, go back home now and get to sewing, girlies. That first year in Valley Forge, and w several of the accounts basically say that, well, I'll just read. This was from one account that said 10 women in carts, each cart drawn by 10 pairs of oxen bearing tons of meal and other supplies, passed through the lines amid cheers that rent the air. Those devoted women, he wrote, preserved the army, and independence from that day was assured. Because there was an edge there where men were so cold and hungry and miserable, they weren't making a lot of progress, that there was a risk that they would just go home and abandon the effort.
Right. I think that's a good place to end.
Okay.
Time is up. Let's say I do want to continue reading this. I think that as you get further into the book, it gets easier in terms of the primary sources. And I am interested in what happens next. I think we won't necessarily do it for every episode, but we will update you.
And as we make our way through, I was not bothered by the ye olde colonial language.
But you are used to reading Shakespeare.
But I did enjoy. There's just a lot here, particularly, like I said, the sort of how the Revolutionary War begins with the economy and boycotting those goods. It says at one point that men are examples of patriotism, and we as women must be patterns of industry. Part of what that meant was making our own stuff at home so that we would be independent economically from the forces of the British markets.
Yes.
With that, yes, more to come. We've covered the Knitting for Liberty and the colonial knitting, and so we will be on at some point to the Knitting in the Circle of Domesticity, which is
Yes.
next. So look forward to more conversations about that. So, Booty, I see your little industrious fingers.
Yes, I somehow managed to get three sweaters on the needles, and they're big sweaters. They're all for me. One of them, the one I'm working on now, is worsted weight, so that goes pretty fast. And I'm on the ribbing.
Oh, wait, do you have the sleeve islands left after this?
Yeah, I have sleeve island left after this, but the nice thing is that once you get down to the cuffs, there's a little color work on the cuffs, so that's kind of
Oh, that'll be fun.
the cherry on top. And then my ongoing Winterlandia, which is a very large project, and it's basically stockinette. And I would say sport weight is being a bit generous. I feel like it's maybe more like fingering,
Oh.
which is, yes, that is a long project. And then my Kleina sweater, which is the one I've been hammering away at, got at least half of one sleeve. So that one I'm furthest along with. And I think this is why it is good to have a couple of projects, because I have two now that are pretty mindless. The worsted weight one, which is called Goldwing, and then the Winterlandia. And then the Kleina is not totally mindless, but it's not too hard either. So it's not very transportable. So I'm kind of slower with that. So that's me.
Well, hold up the sweater again that you're working on so that I can. Oh yeah, that's a so it's a beautiful, it's kind of got an orangey ready yoke that almost looks like sort of feathers.
Yeah, I think
Yeah.
that's the idea. The gold wing
The
is
gold
important.
wing, okay. And then the color, is it below that? Is that like a charcoal?
The red is called Making Tracks, and it's kind of a spin cycle like yarn, and it's junction fiber in Red Hots. It's technically DK, but I would have said worsted. And then the charcoal is Juniper Moon Farm Blue Face Leister. I think that's how you say that. And the color is Iron, which is a very affordable yarn. So the junction fiber mill one is a little bit more expensive, but you only need one or two skeins of it.
For the color work at the top and the yoke there.
Yeah. Now it is not going to be $30, but but it's not going to be 350 either. So.
Are you knitting it for Revolutionary War soldiers, though?
Yes, because I am a Revolutionary War soldier.
Okay.
I consider myself.
Actually, just the thing I noticed that everybody they never have enough of, including George Washington. Apparently, the thing that he always complains about is not having enough socks.
Yes.
All of colonial America struggled with not enough socks.
And I have to say, there was somebody in the book who was saying that they set a record because they were knitting hundreds of rows, and each row was 150 stitches.
Stitches.
It
Yeah,
was like,
well, they were often using really fine silk. I mean, they were basically knitting pantyhose.
yes. And by the way, they were knitting in the round, which I thought was kind of interesting. They weren't knitting flat and seaming. They were using double-pointed needles, which must have been tiny, and knitting
And they
around.
made children knit too. Like the children are told, okay, you have to get so many rows before you can go out to play. Can you imagine if we had tried to do that with our children? I'm just trying to imagine me ever saying, like, well, you gotta finish that row, buddy, before you go out there play. Gotta finish that row. We need those socks. Yeah.
Yeah, we need those socks.
George Washington needs those socks, honey. But I hate to say this, Miss Trigamist Knitter, that I think it's bad planning that it sounds like you're getting to Sleeve Island on all three sweaters simultaneously.
No, because I have a long way to go on the body of my Winterlandia. I will be on Sleeve Island with two sweaters at the same time.
That seems like not good planning.
Yeah, I don't know. This was not good planning in general. Three sweaters at the same time was not good planning, how that happened. But what are you working on?
I'm still resting on my Euro sweater laurels.
It is gorgeous. Oh, and we'll have a picture of you in it.
I've been wearing it like every time I get up and ask Alexa what the weather is going to be like. And if it's below 40, then I'm like, oh, I'm going to wear that sweater because I know I'm not going to be able to wear it for very long. But I've been doing some samples of. I want to do a version of the glimmer poncho for my friend Karen, but I want to try and do a different lace pattern for the panel. So I've been doing some samples for that. And then I went to my printmaking class, my last class, and I thought, well, I wonder if I could make a print with one of my knitting samples. So I use this technique called gel plate, where you basically put paint on this gel plate and then you put the paper down and basically all the paint comes off. So if you put something like a little sample swatch, it'll pull the paint off there and then you'll be able to get the pattern of the sample in there. So I did this.
love that. Gorgeous.
So, and I'll put it on its, I did first just some yellow, and then I covered it over with black, and then put the sample of swatch on there. And so you can see it's a combination of black and yellow with the pattern of the swatch of the lace sample. That was actually really fun because I felt like, oh, I could make some cool prints out of my little lace swatches. It does trash the swatch because you're getting paint on it and it's acrylic paint. I did rinse it out a little bit, but honestly, I've never known what you do with swatches anyway after
Yeah, I mean, and especially if there's something that you think, well, that's not something I want to make, or oh, I really didn't like that yarn, and then yeah, can make it really cool. Send your swatches to Bossy.
I'll make a card. I did use another kind of yarn and it didn't come out at all. It's clearly better with this was a cotton and viscose yarn and a pretty tight weave so that you get more of the definition and things. Anything that's sort of woolly, it's not just not going to have the definition.
That's interesting.
That was fun. So
Yeah.
but I do have a friend of mine just had her first granddaughter. So I was thinking I might have to go back to Bunny Land for a little while and make a little bunny, which might be fun as a little
It
project.
is, and I'm very tempted. I did buy the pattern for the mystery knit along with Sarah Shira. It's the gnome lady.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking that it would be nice to have a small project. The first clue, at least, was a lot of little tiny parts around the ring, but it is called Professor Fungi.
Oh.
Yes, Professor. So, and it's a mystery, so you don't know what it's going to look like. So you wind up the first clue anyway, you wind up with a whole bunch of little tiny parts, and then hopefully it'll make more sense once you put them together. But she did have a good recommendation. I thought this was interesting. She said, if you have a whole bunch of parts and you're afraid of losing them or not knowing where they go, about say which is the right and which is the left, that kind of thing, put it on a piece of paper, write it down, and then take a picture of it. So you know which piece is which.
Well, that is a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the bunnies it's not that hard, but I can see where yeah, you could get a lot of pieces. Well, that sounds so you've got three sweaters and a mystery knit, Professor Fungi.
Well, I haven't started the mystery knit. Oh, I also have a shawl that I started, which is another mystery knit, Castanitis.
I've never heard that. That's great. But, well, Booty, I think we should give a shout out. We had our Zoom knit up, and thank you to everybody who came. We had a lot of fun talking about our favorite eats and drinks and knits. So, thank you to everybody who came. Mom, my mom,
Mom, thanks, Mom. Let's,
Liz
yeah.
came too. My sisters-in-laws, Gail and Leslie, my neighbor, Mary Ellen, Betsy, thank you for coming too.
Lucy, thank
And
you so
Lucy.
much. And my son, William.
William came. Yes, that was very fun. Yeah, but.
Speaking of my son, I just wanted to give him an extra shout out because we have been having to redo the website. It's still a work in progress, but it's looking much better. And that is in large part thanks to him. I keep coming to him and saying, I need some help. And he has been very patient and helpful. So.
Yes. So special shout out to William for a lot of technical support above and beyond the call. You are grateful to him, but I am even more grateful to him.
Yeah.
So lots of good projects on the needles. Definitely try our killer sangria, compliments of Debbie Frabel. That's definitely a winner winner.
Yes.
We'll look forward to some more talk about the social history of American knitting. And I think it's time to say, whatever you do, Don't
Don't knit
like
like
my
my
sister.
sister.